They certainly have got a desire, and the propaganda would indicate that they want to conduct attacks outside of Afghanistan, thus far relatively limited.
The ISIS caliphate still showing signs of life. It's Tuesday, December 31st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also coming up this half hour, confusion about whether the Taliban wants peace and a garlic trade war that may prove to be the benefit of American consumers. That and much more, all on today's VOA Asia. In Afghanistan, the Taliban leadership has rejected reports that it's considering a ceasefire in its war against the Afghan government. VOA's Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad has been covering this story, and he spoke a short time ago with my colleague, Kate Pound Dawson.
There have been repeated reports in the Afghan media, but nobody really paid attention until the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago and Associated Press yesterday on Sunday reported exclusively that the Taliban supreme leadership has agreed to declare a ceasefire in order to sign this pending peace agreement with the United States. That really led to a lot of speculation because it would have been a major compromise on the part of Taliban, which has consistently maintained that it will observe a ceasefire only after a foreign troop withdrawal agreement is signed with the United States. So that's what actually prompted the Taliban chief spokesman, Zabihullah Mujahid, to issue this strong rebuttal that the insurgent group does not intend to cease hostilities. The spokesman admitted that recently during peace negotiations with the United States, it was requested from the U.S. side that the Taliban need to bring down battlefield violence so that the U.S. side can convince stakeholders in the United States to carry forward the peace dialogue with the Taliban and finally sign this long-awaited agreement.
Now, there actually has been quite a bit of violence in the last several weeks. Can you talk a little bit about what's been happening?
Well, this is very unusual in terms of fighting in Afghanistan because in December particularly, because of the harsh weather conditions, and particularly in northern Afghan provinces, fighting almost subsides before it picks up in spring season, but it is very unusual that we have seen almost daily major Taliban attacks in northern Afghan provinces and killing, on average, like 15 to 16 Afghan soldiers, which obviously, suggests or Taliban are trying to send a very strong message to the U.S. that the insurgent group does not at all want a ceasefire with the Afghan government, which the Taliban alleges has been installed by the U.S. or is a puppet of the United States, and it really wants a peace deal signed with the United States so that it can come to the negotiating table with Afghan stakeholders and then discuss a nationwide ceasefire so that these hostilities that have been going on for almost four decades in Afghanistan could be permanently ended.
What is the status of the peace talks? Are there any talks going on now? How long has it been since there's been a session of talks?
The U.S. side told the Taliban that it is stopping the dialogue process. That was about 2 weeks ago, and wanted the Taliban to go back to their leadership and ask them to stop or reduce violence in Afghanistan if the Taliban really wants the peace process to go forward. And for the moment, no discussions are taking place. However, we know that top Taliban leadership, they have been meeting and they have been seriously considering to agree on a ceasefire as and when a peace agreement is signed with the United States.
That was VOA journalist Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad, speaking with editor Kate Pound Dawson. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Indonesia says it has protested to Beijing over presence of a Chinese vessel in its territorial waters. At least 50 people have died in Bangladesh as cold weather continues to sweep across the country. The South China Morning Post reports that Chinese Premier Liu Hui will visit Washington soon to sign a Phase 1 trade deal with the U.S. And a group of protesters in New Delhi was beaten and shoved into buses by police as they attempted to demonstrate against a new citizenship law. Read and watch more on VOA Asia Facebook and Twitter, plus the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. After fits and starts, the past year saw the collapse of the Islamic State terror group's self-declared caliphate, with the last scrap of IS-controlled territory in Syria succumbing to U.S.-backed forces in March. However, as VOA national security correspondent Jeff Selden reports, the IS seems to have withstood the heavy blows and is reasserting itself across the globe.
Even before 2019 began, Islamic State was on the run, no longer able to rule territory in Iraq. There were some who said the terror group's time had come to an end.
I've been president for almost 2 years, and we've really stepped it up, and we have won against ISIS.
It was a claim U.S. President Donald Trump would make again and again.
We just took over, you kept hearing it was 90%, 92%, the caliphate in Syria. Now it's 100%. We just took over 100% caliphate.
The claims at times disputed by U.S.-backed forces leading the charge against Islamic State's last enclave in Syria. Then on March 23rd, the Islamic State's self-declared caliphate fell for good. Only it quickly became clear the fight was not over. Islamic State fighters, as many as 18,000 of them, still roamed ungoverned spaces in Syria and Iraq. While thousands of captured fighters and tens of thousands of their relatives languished in makeshift prisons and displaced persons camps. In April, Islamic State showed signs of life, claiming responsibility for the Easter Sunday attack in Sri Lanka that killed at least 250 people and wounded scores more. There was also word from its reclusive leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, urging followers not to lose faith in what he called a battle of attrition. Elsewhere, Islamic State affiliates flourished, intelligence sources estimating as many as 5,000 flocked to the terror group's black banner in Afghanistan.
So they certainly have got a desire, and the propaganda would indicate that they want to conduct attacks outside of Afghanistan, thus far relatively limited.
At the same time, Islamic State media operatives launched a social media campaign highlighting its efforts from Africa to the Philippines. But in October, a potentially devastating blow.
Last night, the United States brought the world's number one terrorist leader to justice. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is dead.
U.S. Special Forces tracked Baghdadi to his Syrian hideout, killing him, while U.S.-backed forces killed his number two. Islamic State quickly responded, naming a new caliph, the still mysterious Abu Ibrahim al-Hashimi al-Qurashi, while IS followers and affiliates around the world rallied.
The insurgency is alive and kicking in northwest Iraq, for sure, and to a lesser degree Syria.
Still, as the year ends, the U.S. and its allies struck two more blows against Islamic State. Defeat in a key Afghan province and near eradication on one of its favorite social media platforms.
For the time being, for as far as we know, IS is not present on the internet anymore, and we will see how fast, if ever, they will regain surface.
Still, in places like Africa, where attacks like one in Niger killed 71 soldiers, troops are gearing up, expecting the battle against Islamic State to rage on, with little end in sight. Jeff Selden, VOA News, Washington.
happening now in Asia. Thailand should brace for serious water shortages when the hot season begins in March after a year with unusually little rainfall. Retention of water by dams and upstream areas of the Mekong River is also seen as a contributing factor. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Australia's long brush fire crisis is continuing, with large parts of the state of Victoria now threatened. Emergency authorities have taken the highly unusual step of telling tens of thousands of people in East Gippsland region to leave. Phil Mercer has more.
Our fears that extremely hot and windy conditions could merge three major bushfires in East Gippsland to form a devastating mega blaze. The authorities say the situation is potentially life-threatening for residents and tourists. Andrew Crisp is the Victorian Emergency Management Commissioner.
Whilst we will do everything that we can, we're asking you now to leave East Gippsland. From that area, along the coast there, into the parks, into the forest, you should not be there, and we want you to get out now.
East Gippsland has some of Australia's most stunning forests and coastline. At the height of the summer tourism season, about 30,000 holiday visitors have been told to leave. Sandra Huggins owns a general store in the small town of Nowa Nowa.
Both of our caravan parks have been emptied out. Got a list of about 50, maybe not quite that many locals who are planning to leave or have already left. I've got a small list of people planning to stay.
Fires have also threatened homes near the city of Melbourne. Dangerous fire conditions and extreme heat are forecast Monday across four states in southeastern Australia. The intensity and scale of the fire crisis have unnerved many Australians. Thousands have signed a petition calling on Sydney to scrap its dazzling New Year's Eve fireworks display. They insist the event would be an insult and could traumatise some of those affected by the bushfires. The city's Lord Mayor Clover Moore said the fireworks were planned months in advance and that most of the budget had already been spent. Nine people have died since the fires began, hundreds of houses have been lost, and about 5 million hectares of land left scorched. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Chinese pastor Wang Yi has been sentenced to 9 years in prison on charges of inciting state subversion. Following a recent trial, Wang was also deprived of his political rights for 3 years. The Sichuan court declined to offer details of his trial. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. A bad harvest and the U.S.-China trade war have pushed U.S. farm debt to a record $416 billion this year. But not all farmers are going through hard times, as VOA's Calla Yu reports.
In Gilroy, California, known as America's garlic capital, you can find everything garlic. Even the wall painting downtown is about garlic. Christopher Ranch has been growing garlic for 63 years. They process about 1 billion bulbs of the pungent stuff every year. Unlike many other farms that have been hurt by the Trump administration's trade war with China, business is booming at Christopher Ranch.
So Christopher Ranch grows over 100 million pounds of garlic every single year, and about half of that is going to go to fresh sales. The other half is going to be run through the plant we're in right now.
After the Trump administration implemented two rounds of tariffs on Chinese garlic, Christopher Ranch projects a 30% increase of sales this year. But business hasn't always been so good.
Before 1994, almost all the garlic consumed in the United States was grown here in California. In 1994, it was the first time that Chinese shippers first started illegally dumping garlic to the tunes of tens of millions of pounds almost overnight. So whereas there used to be 12 commercial garlic farms in California, now there's only three.
Thanks in part to testimony by Christopher's grandfather, the U.S. government increased tariffs on Chinese garlic by 377% due to dumping activities. But until this most recent trade war, large amounts of Chinese garlic exports still found their way to the U.S. The price of California garlic is about four times as much as Chinese imported garlic. But with new tariffs in place, a box of Chinese garlic, which used to cost $15, now costs $45 to $50. American garlic sells for about $60.
We're investing in new roaster, doubling our capacity. We're investing in new automated baggers for our peeling, increasing our capacity by one-third. We're looking to take on PM shifts, investing in our workforce.
As a rare winner in the trade war, Christopher says he welcomes tariffs on Chinese products, but still supports free trade.
We're not afraid of free trade. We're not afraid of a little competition. When it comes to Argentinian garlic, Mexican garlic, Spanish garlic, they play by the rules of the fair market. They play by the rules of the international order. It's only when non-market command economies like China violate the rules that we have a problem.
Although tariffs have helped American garlic producers in the short run, Christopher still believes the trade war isn't good for the U.S. or for China. KLU, VOA News, Gilroy, California.
This news break from VOA Asia. A top Kazakh official said authorities were looking at possible technical malfunction in the crash of a Bek Air plane that killed 12 of 98 passengers and crew early Friday. Roman Skylar, a deputy prime minister, cautioned that no cause has yet been pinpointed. Visit VOA Asia on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a tweet from U.S. President Donald Trump that identified an intelligence analyst as the alleged whistleblower who helped spark his impeachment was temporarily blocked over the weekend, with Twitter blaming an outage that affected a number of user accounts. Democrats and some Republicans and members of the U.S. intelligence community have strongly objected to the effort to reveal the whistleblower's identity, calling it inappropriate and possibly illegal. Attorney Joel Paul of the UC Hastings Law School spoke with our Lori London.
If, in fact, the person who the president has named is the whistleblower, it would be a very serious violation of the Whistleblower Act. Moreover, even if it isn't the whistleblower, or if it is the whistleblower, the president's actions would seem to be intended to intimidate witnesses and to prevent other whistleblowers from coming forward. And so I think this potentially could constitute another impeachable crime, which the president could be impeached for subsequently.
The whole point of this whole whistleblower protection is that allows people to come forward when they see something they believe is wrongdoing by elected officials. Is that correct?
The Whistleblower Act is a really important reform. It was largely promoted by Senator Grassley and by Senator McCaskill, and the whistleblower law is really sort of fundamental, I think, to preventing corruption and preventing illegal acts within the government. It's a way in which we hold our elected officials accountable for their actions. And if whistleblowers are not going to be protected, if their anonymity is exposed, if they're subject to potentially reprisals by people who disagree with them, this will seriously undermine our ability in a democracy to hold accountable our elected officials.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the current impeachment trial that we are expecting in the Senate. It appears at this point that there's somewhat of a standoff with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi not willing to send over the articles of impeachment to the Senate so that they can begin the trial because she is not convinced that it will be an actual trial, an actual fair trial. Mitch McConnell has so far not changed his viewpoint that we heard when he said that basically he's looking to see a quick acquittal and he's working in close connection with the president and his attorneys.
Right. The disagreement really comes down to whether or not there will be witnesses and evidence that can be introduced in the trial. Leader McConnell has said that they would not vote on whether to have witnesses and what witnesses could be admitted until after the arguments are presented by House leaders and by the president's attorneys. And of course, given that McConnell controls the majority of senators in the Senate, that suggests that the Democrats would not have an opportunity to present witnesses.
Attorney Joel Paul speaking with our Lori London. Finally today, Cambodian cuisine, often overshadowed by its similar Thai and Vietnamese counterparts, is relatively unknown to the world, in part of because of that nation's violent history. But a Cambodian chef is working to change that. VOA's Chetra Chap reports.
In a successful Kickstarter campaign to fund her cookbook, Cambodian famed chef Ratana Ruh, commonly known as Chef Na, says her country's culinary art is at risk of disappearing.
When I tried to find out how was Cambodian cuisine like 50 or 100 years ago, I searched in libraries, talked to historians, archaeologists. I couldn't find anything in particular.
The 34-year-old self-taught chef helped her family sell vegetables and learned to cook from them when she was a child. Now she is racing against time to document traditional Cambodian recipes passed down orally from genocide survivors in remote Cambodian villages.
The Cambodian people in remote provinces are the source of original Khmer arts and traditions, but they do not have the habit of writing them down.
The few written records of Cambodian culinary traditions were almost completely erased in the mid-1970s by the Khmer Rouge regime. During its four-year rule, 1.7 million people were killed and Cambodian cuisine was reduced to a daily diet of watery rice porridge. A daughter of Khmer Rouge survivors, Ruth says her mission is to make sure the world and her sons know about Khmer food.
We know that Cambodians don't have the habit of documenting our traditions. I have now documented about 200 Khmer dishes, and I selected 80 of them for my first cookbook.
The 200-page cookbook, entitled Nyam, or Eat, consists of recipes for the country's signature dishes like coco soup, banana rice cake, fried fish bread, and stone crab stir-fry with pineapple. Yet Ruth says Nyam is more than just a book of recipes.
A major feature of this book is that I describe all the health benefits for all individual dishes and ingredients.
While developing precise cooking measurements and nutritional information for her cookbook, Ruth also runs a home restaurant, offers food consultancy, and hosts cooking shows. I'm Chetra Chap for VOA News, Washington.
And that's VOA Asia for today, this last day of 2019. Thanks so much for spending it with us. We will be with you again in the new year. No surprise there. We hope you'll join us as well. Until then, have a great holiday, and we'll see you in the new year. Be well.